You know, we've talked a lot on the show about the war on Ukraine and how our community has really banded together to help refugees that have been fleeing war-torn Ukraine. Since the beginning of the war, more than 5 million people have fled Ukraine. That number is expected to, of course, increase. We have upwards of 5,000 Ukrainian refugees here in Edmonton and more in Alberta and, of course, more in Canada as well. That number closer to 50,000 when it comes to Ukrainian refugees in our country. So what do they need from us? We've seen lots of different drives of support, furniture drives, clothing drives, lots of funds being raised to help them as they transition to life here in our community. But for asylum seekers, is that enough? Or do they need more mental health supports in order to make that transition from some really horrifying situations a little smoother when they arrive in Canada?
And certainly the Ukrainian situation has brought this whole topic to be top of mind. But keep in mind that the UN, in a most recent survey, I think 2021, had said that there were some 100 million people being displaced around the world for any variety of reasons. And in many cases, you know, fleeing tyranny, fleeing the fact that they were afraid for their lives, many leaving family be home. What kind of psychological impact does that have on the people who are arriving here? And I don't say that in you know, a critical way. It's how do you help these people to get over that hump, which it would be an enormous obstacle, I would think. Dr. Vanessa Reddit is a family physician in Toronto, and she works exclusively with asylum seekers and has no doubt seen any number of difficult cases and traumas and just people trying to figure out how to move forward. Dr. Reddit, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, Doc, it's not a surprise to learn that asylum seekers experience higher rates of very serious mental health issues than any other community. What are some of the things that you see in your experience?
Yeah, well, most asylum seekers and refugees have experienced profound trauma and hardship, ranging from torture to sexual violence to war before coming to Canada. But they also face tremendous stressors through their migratory journey, and once they arrive in Canada and are trying to build their new life here. So I see many of my patients grappling with symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, anxiety, insomnia, and that can really manifest in many ways, you know, ranging from sleep disturbance and nightmares to, you know, having difficulties leaving their house because they're so fearful, to, you know, even cognitive impacts when you're not sleeping and you're very preoccupied with anxiety. There can be difficulties concentrating, learning a new language, etc. So that it can really have a range of impacts and affect both adults and children.
And is that taken into account as people arrive and then they get some assistance or they get some help to settle? Government, I'm sure, helps in some ways, or charitable organizations that help in some ways. Do some of these issues with psychological and mental health supports, do they slip through the cracks, or are there plans in place to help people deal with it?
Yeah, well, you know, the answer is complex to that. As you are well aware, the mental health supports in Canada in general are insufficient for the need of our entire population. And those gaps certainly exist for refugee claimants and for refugees as well. I think that certainly, you know, settlement agencies, community organizations do the best that they can to help people to connect with specific mental health resources. But it's also important to recognize when looking at mental health, addressing basic needs is essential as well. I spoke about how people arriving to Canada face tremendous stress here, not being able to find affordable housing, not having a meaningful job, or facing barriers to employment, facing racism here. So, you know, when we can start to address those concerns, have stable housing for people, English classes that they can enroll in, those things are also really helpful. And, you know, people deal with their mental health in different ways, and they need and want different support. So it's not that everyone wants counseling. What may be most appropriate for somebody is being part of a soccer team. Maybe that's the best thing for their mental health. So we really need to think about it in a comprehensive way.
When we're talking about asylum seekers and the obviously the struggles that they're facing as they transition from some really, you know, traumatic situations, is there generally relief on the other side of it, or is treatment absolutely necessary? Does time heal these wounds?
I think it's different for every person, but I do want to focus in on some of the additional stressors that asylum seekers face specifically. So, you know, they arrive and they are making a refugee claim here, and they have to wait for an Immigration Refugee Board hearing to determine their claim, whether it's accepted or rejected, and in which case they would have an appeal. But that means that people are caught in an aching limbo of uncertainty and precarity for months and often years. They may be waiting for that IRB hearing, the Immigration Refugee Board hearing, to determine their claim for years. And what we know is that a foundational step of healing from trauma is attaining a sense of security and safety. And with uncertain immigration status, people don't have that sense of safety, and it can really impede their recovery. They can feel haunted by real or perceived threats to their life, and it's really difficult to move forward from trauma when you haven't had confirmation that you can securely stay in Canada. So there are also really, you know, systemic barriers within our immigration system that keep people in that limbo, and we really need to improve that process.
This is a tough conversation to have, this particular part, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is it at our own peril to ignore the mental health difficulties? If you have people who are coming in with, you know, suffering from severe trauma, there could be that impacts on our society at large. So do we ignore this issue at our own peril? If you're going to accept people in to help them out, to take care of them, to give them a safe haven, it would have to be including this kind of assistance, would it not?
So, you know, we have a responsibility to anyone who's living, working in Canada, to respect their rights, to ensure that they can live a life with dignity. And so that includes addressing, you know, basic needs, access to education, employment opportunities, and comprehensive medical care as well. You know, again, I will say that it's not that every person who has suffered from trauma needs our biomedical model of mental health support. It's not that everyone needs to be on medication or seek counseling or see a psychiatrist. And in fact, many people do not. Many people, what helps them heal is learning English and getting a job, yep, seeing their kids thrive in school, you know, making friends. All of those things are really essential. So it really needs to be that comprehensive response. But, you know, we don't, as a society, we want everyone to be thriving, and we want equity and justice, yep, and human dignity. So that benefits all of us.
Politically, I'm wondering, is there an impetus to help, or does this conversation come up as one that we know as civilians is important, but politically it's largely untouched?
So, you know, there have been some encouraging movements from the federal government. There was a mandate from the Prime Minister in December of 2021 to the Minister of Immigration and Citizenship of Canada, asking for a number of things to improve the immigration system, including regularization of undocumented migrants, improving the temporary foreign worker program, and ensuring that those individuals who come year after year working and putting food on our table, mm-hmm, taking care of our elders and our children, can actually attain permanent residency where that pathway currently does not exist, and to improve the refugee claim process and the larger refugee system here in Canada, that would also include family reunification. So I think we're in a moment where there is attention on this issue. That mandate, again, it was about 10 months ago. We're waiting for action. The minister recently came out saying that they're looking at this issue. But what we really want to see are concrete steps that are going to make a difference in people's lives. And secure immigration status is so essential for that.
Dr. Vanessa Reddit, really good talking to you this morning. Thank you so much for sharing your point of view, your perspective, and your experience. Appreciate it.
Thank you for covering this issue.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.